Hi, I'm Charlotte.
And I'm Helly, and welcome to Growth in Progress, the podcast where we have open and honest conversations about things that aren't usually discussed, but that can help us all to grow.
In each episode, we spend some time catching up. We share what we've been doing over the past week, share a recommendation, and then we go on to discuss a topic that we think is really relevant to the things that are going on right now. If you enjoy this episode, please don't forget to hit subscribe on whichever platform you're listening on. And if you could leave us a five-star review, we would be forever grateful. Good morning, my dear. How are you doing? Tell me about your week. What have you been doing?
Good morning. After a very stressful week, I had a really nice weekend. It was a really lovely week. It felt like a proper, felt like we lived here, which is a really weird thing to say because we do live here. But we went on a bike ride down to the beach. And we went to the cinema and we watched Top Gun Maverick. Have you seen it yet?
So here's a confession. I've never seen any of the Top Gun movies. I don't know what it's about. And I actually thought a Maverick was a type of duck until about 4 weeks ago.
It's a mallard that maybe is.
Yeah, I know that now. Yeah.
To be fair, I've only seen the first Top Gun once and it was fine. Like, I understand why it's a classic and why people love it. I don't think you maybe need to have a bit of a vague understanding about what happened in it, but it was honestly spectacular. The music is by Hans Zimmer and Lady Gaga. So the music itself just sold it to me.
Yeah, I'd be on board with that.
Like, the visuals, the story was great. It kind of pulled enough from the first one that like OG fans will have really enjoyed it. But I mean, I knew what happened in the first one. But it tells you that in the movie. You could, in theory, go and see this one and not having seen the first one. But it was amazing. And then we went on a boat tour on Sunday and saw dolphins, which, oh my God. It was amazing. Weird. They were so close to the boat as well. And,
I never thought I was very fussed by dolphins as an animal until I saw them like swimming in the ocean like that. And I was like, you are the coolest things. Like, it's just magical.
I have this really embarrassing story where as a kid, my parents took me to some sort of aquarium and there was like an opportunity to pet a dolphin, which obviously now I realize is not a great thing. However, they always tell this story that I touched this dolphin and went, ugh, smelly fish. And like, was so judgmental and I was about 4 years old. So I always thought that I wasn't a big fan of dolphins, but then I saw them Sunday. And yeah, I was so excited. Did not expect myself to be as excited as I was. They were not smelly fish. They were incredible.
They're really cool, aren't they? When we were on a boat tour and we thought we might see them, we were like, you know what, the sunrise is so stunning, like, actually it's fine either way. And then we saw them and we were like, oh my God, this is so cool, like, surpassed my expectations. And also there's something about seeing animals in the wild like that that's just really like cute. It's just nice.
It's been very, very nice. What have you been up to? How was your week/weekend?
I just enjoyed the sunshine because it's finally over 23 degrees in the UK.
Yay! And
I'm very happy. Don't get me wrong. There's that sweet spot of like 23, 24 degrees in the UK where everyone's happy and not complaining. And we definitely surpassed that last week when we hit like 32. And we just aren't equipped for it here. We don't have aircon. We don't have marble floors. We don't have houses that are cool. We don't have outside space. But I bloody loved it. It was brilliant. And I found that our local corner shop sell the lychee Rubicon, like the little fizzy cans. So that's like my drink of the summer. It's just been lovely to have the sun out and enjoy it and not have to put a jumper on at 7 p.m. every night.
Yeah, I do feel like it's that peak thing in the UK where you get that 1 or 2 weeks of really hot weather. And the first 2 days, everyone was buzzing. And then I kind of saw it on social media. Everyone's like, I hate this. I'm sick of it. Please, can we go below 30 again?
It's on Friday when I think everyone was just exhausted because no one had slept. And it was so hot. And it was one of those typical days where, like, there was no way I was finishing early on Friday. There was so much to do in the end. I was like, oh, I just want to be outside. But it is lovely and it feels like summer and exciting stuff is happening over the next couple of weeks. So Yeah, feels good. Do you want to share what your recommendation is for this week?
Yes. So my recommendation is a little bit different because I honestly didn't think I would like this movie. It's called Dune. And
I want to see this.
So we watched it on... Actually, this is a really like stupid recommendation potential. I think you can rent the movie, but we watched it on HBO because we have Hulu. But it came out last year, so I'm pretty sure you can rent it to watch it now.
It is on Sky Cinema.
Oh, okay, cool. I did not expect to like it, but it's a sci-fi that's based in the very far future. And it's actually based on a book that was originally written in the 60s, I think.
Yes.
But it is a long movie. It's like 2.5 hours and it's only part one. I think there's going to be one other movie. And the amount of famous people in it, there's like Josh Brolin, Zendaya is in it, Jason Momoa, there's so many famous faces in it. And it basically revolves around House Atreides, which is a planet, a noble planet in the future, who are tasked to take over this other inhospitable planet called Arrakis. And it's a desert planet where the local people called the Fremen have basically adapted to survive, but no one else can survive there. Anyway, I won't ruin the whole story. And so I was mostly frustrated by the cliffhanger at the end, because obviously it's a two-part thing and the second one isn't coming out till 2023, I believe.
Oh, maybe I will watch it soon then, because that sort of thing really bugs me.
I will say what blew me away the most, it was an interesting story and I did enjoy it, but the cinematography, is that the right word?
Yeah, that's the word.
Spectacular. Like, I wish I'd seen it in a cinema, because I can imagine it would have been, like, it is cinematically stunning. I thought it was incredible. So yeah, definitely worth a watch. I didn't expect to like that kind of sci-fi thing. I'm not gonna lie, as soon as I heard Zendaya was in it, I was like, well, I guess I'm gonna watch it anyway.
You know what, I won't lie, that's kind of why I'm like, I want to watch it, because I just love her and everything she does, and I want to be her when I grow up, basically. But I keep, when it came out, I was a bit like, oh, I'm not fussed, it doesn't really seem like my kind of thing. And then the more people who I've spoken to who have seen it, similarly to you, like, didn't see it in the cinema or afterwards, have said it's phenomenal. And I'm like, oh, actually, it sounds like a really great one for like a Saturday night movie night.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think we watched it on Friday night. We had got some popcorn and made a little like at home date night, and it was really nice for that.
My favorite thing as well is when you do that, but like you treat it like your home is a cinema, so all the lights go off, you put your phones outside room. Like, you fully commit that you're going to the cinema, and it's just so much fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. What's your recommendation?
I'm buzzing about this recommendation. It is a new documentary on Netflix called Halftime. And it is a documentary that follows J-Lo for pretty much the year leading up to her doing the halftime show at the Super Bowl with Shakira. And it is brilliant. Like, growing up, I was quite a J-Lo fan. Like, I always remember listening to all of her albums and stuff like that. And I felt like I reached my early to mid-teens and just thought that she was like not that talented, a bit boring. Kind of just like, I couldn't tell you why, but I had a really different opinion of her. And then when we saw her years ago at that concert we went to, it really like reignited my love for her.
Yeah, because for change, wasn't it?
Yeah, she was phenomenal. Like, her 50-minute set, she was dancing away for the whole thing. And it was just hit after hit. And I remember thinking like, God, she's really underrated. But this documentary actually really addresses that, in terms of like how the media turned on her and how the racism she experienced in the media was horrific, especially when she was dating Ben Affleck originally, like back in the day. And it was really interesting when I like married up the timelines, I was like, oh, so when the media were saying that, that's what I thought. And it's just quite interesting. But the entire documentary is fascinating. It follows her. So in the documentary, she's just released Hustlers, which, as a side note, is a phenomenal movie that I really recommend everyone watching. It's completely different to all the other pieces of work she's done. But it's incredible. Like, I really would recommend it. And it just looks at her journey to the award season with that movie, but also prepping for the Super Bowl and interviews her and her family members and the people who work really closely with her. And it's just such an interesting insight into how someone like her has got to where she is, the dedication and just sheer hard work. I had no idea that she was an actress first and a singer second, and she's done over 40 movies.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Because I used to love her in like Made in Manhattan.
Yeah, I know her from Made in Manhattan, The Wedding Planner, stuff like that.
Monster in Law as well. That was another one that I used to love that she was in.
I loved that, but there are so many movies she's done. And the thing that really like shot her to acting fame was Selena in the the 80s or the 90s. So yeah, I now want to go back and like watch a back catalogue of all of her movies. But even if you aren't a huge J-Lo fan, I think it's the sort of thing that you can really take a lot from, to see like someone's work ethic and passion for what they do and knowing that it's for a bigger cause. Yeah, phenomenal. It's on Netflix. The music in it is obviously phenomenal. And she's recorded some tracks specifically for the documentary as well.
I'm so glad that you've mentioned this because I saw the trailer for Halftime ages ago and I was like, oh my God, I need to watch that. And I had completely forgotten about it, but I definitely want to watch it because I had the same journey as you. And I think I really liked it. I probably knew her more from movies when I was younger. And then, yeah, I just feel like, I don't know, I actually just feel like she dropped off the face of the planet and I didn't really have like any opinion of her, to be honest. And I guess it's probably the same as you that it coincided with that time where she was just really being like thrown under the bus.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, same as you, when we saw her live that time and her special guest was Mary J. Blige, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, just casually Mary J. Blige. That was incredible.
Insane. Yeah, so I'm 100% gonna watch that because I love her so much.
I have so much respect for her. Like, she's incredible. And we can come back to this in next week's podcast episode because I think it's more relevant for that topic, but I don't think she has any Botox, and it's really made me rethink whether or not I get Botox because she has full movement in her face, and I was like,
wow, oh my God.
Yeah I mean, I don't know whether it's partly because obviously she can afford like the best facials and skincare in the world. And also she probably had it when she was a lot younger. But yeah, don't think there's anything in there. Maybe a bit of filler. But
wow.
She has full movement of her face. So
that is impressive.
I know. Anyway, enough of J-Lo's forehead. Shall we talk about our topic for this week?
Yes. So this week we wanted to have a discussion about being a good leader, but also how that fits into stepping into your first managing role, because it's something that many of us experience at some point. A lot of us may already have, or it could be something that's kind of imminently happening in the future in your career. And it can feel super daunting. So I think it's worth thinking about the kind of leader that you want to be, as well as how you handle that responsibility in your next career step, because obviously it is also a huge responsibility jump as well from presumably what you would already be doing.
I think that's a really key thing, isn't it? Like, it's a responsibility at the end of the day. Like, if you're choosing to lead a team, if you're choosing, or maybe not even leading a team, because I think leadership comes in so many ways, but mainly it's through management, but you have a responsibility to everyone in that team to lead the culture and the practices and how you want to go about it. And I think often it is prized as like a tick box, like next step in your career. And when I was younger, I definitely thought that. And then I think, like anything, you grow and you work on yourself, etc., and then you realize actually it's not really to do with you at all. And it's a lot more about like how you're influencing and building up others, because at the end of the day, whatever your role, whatever your job, whether you're thinking leadership in your like career or whether in other parts of your life, you have a responsibility to, and you have the opportunity to cultivate a positive culture and to ensure that people feel supported and it's open. And I think that's a really incredible thing.
I think that's the key part, isn't it, to understand what your core values are. Because, like, I think the fundamentals of being a leader or being in a management role are, like, what are the values that you admire and that you think are really important? Yeah. And for me, when I went into my first management role, it was an opportunity to look at my past managers who I really admired, like what aspects of their leadership did I really admire? Equally,
yeah,
what awful managers did I have that I really want to make sure I do not emulate because they did not have a style that I thought was beneficial to the team. And I think if you can understand what those values are for you, so when I think, like, ambition is a really important one for me. I wouldn't ever want a team to feel afraid to show ambition, especially when it comes to women or marginalized groups. I wouldn't ever want someone in my team to feel like they couldn't show their ambition. And yeah. I think in the same vein, like you said, that kind of trust, hands-off culture as well is really important. Yeah. Because if there's no trust, how can you build a good team environment?
I completely agree. And I think you fundamentally got to want to see other people succeed. And that is so easy to say, like, yeah, of course I want everyone to succeed. But I think it's, especially as women in business, we're taught that there's only so much success that can go around. And so even when we see other people succeed, there's that, like, little green-eyed monster within us that's like, But I think if you're leading a team in any capacity, you've got to really, like, check your ego at the door there and go, no, I fundamentally want to see other people succeed. Because when people around you succeed, it is a brilliant feeling. Like, it is so exciting. And I think you can realize that it only benefits everyone else. Like, someone else's success is never your failing. And that's so different to what we're taught and what we have ingrained in us. Like, I know we both went to all girls schools, and that definitely was not the message that I was taught growing up, which I think now is such a shame. And I would say is actually, a failing of their leadership at the time. But I think now as an adult and a grown woman, I can say, yeah, there's one of my core values is that I want to see everyone in my team succeed, whether that's people who are technically below me in a hierarchy or who are my counterparts or who are more senior to me. I just want to see them succeed. And I think once you start emulating that, it's contagious because everyone feels that positivity. And, you know, you can build a really positive environment. Like, you know, that whole thing of, like, misery loves company. I think on the flip side, positivity and success attracts more of that. And so as a leader, you have an option which path you want to go down. Doesn't mean you have to be, like, insincere about it and you can't be, like, authentic and vulnerable. But I think you have the opportunity to pick which path you go down the majority of the time.
I think that idea of, like, what culture you create really plays into, like, the difference between leadership and management, because I feel like there is a massive difference there. Like, management can be hands off. It can be goal setting. Management is those people at the very top of a business who you don't see day to day. They're not leaders. They're managing. They are from a very pragmatic standpoint. And whereas I feel like leadership is more that teamwork and how you can come together as a team to deliver something, like acknowledging that the collective skill in your group and the different perspectives is where the growth value is. And I think if you can, a good leader is acknowledging that and really bringing that to the fore, because I think it's so important. Like, being a leader doesn't mean that you know everything. Like, I think it's almost, I don't want to say it's almost the opposite, but you're there to lead a team of people to bring out the best in their skills. It means that you're good at leading a team to be the best that they can be. And the more diverse that team is and the more you can nurture that, the better. And I think a lot of people go into their first management or first leadership role thinking that it means they should know everything. And it can lead to them being kind of having a bit of misplaced confidence, when actually I feel like that leadership role you should acknowledge that that's always a continuous learning experience. You never complete, like in quotation marks, you never complete being a leader. There's always more that you can learn about humans, about business, about leading a team, about that team culture.
I think that's exciting as well. And I think one of the key things with leadership, and it's quite hard to like find the balance, but it's everything about you, and actually it's got nothing to do with you. Like, it's everything to do with how you decide you want that culture to be and how you want to entrust different members of your team and build that relationship. Like, that's all about you and what you want, but equally the big picture is nothing to do with you. Just because you might be in a certain position does not mean your opinion or your thoughts are more important than anyone else's in the room. It's not about, you know, fanning your own ego. It's about being able to meet people where they are. And I think that is often something that's really overlooked. People go, oh, they're a great leader, and you almost go, I want to emulate them. But then you kind of have to remember that it's only partly because it's them. It's partly their understanding that they're not the center of the universe. And that's quite hard. And I think the way that, and I don't actually know if it's the same in like other countries and other industries even, but within the industry I'm in, it's very much expected that it's almost like a progression point, that at some point you will become a manager, you will have line reports, you will grow a team. And I think that the real risk there is that that becomes, that management and therefore leadership becomes a tick box exercise that's achieved through tenure and how long, so essentially how long you've been with a company or in a role. And tenure does not guarantee you anything. It doesn't ensure that you're particularly great at what you do. It doesn't ensure that you're a good leader. It doesn't ensure that you're the best person. It just tells you how long you've been doing something. Mm-hmm. And so I think you, when you become a leader, it's really important to check your ego at the door and go, it doesn't matter how many years I've been doing this. This is an entirely different skill set. I just don't feel like it sits, you know, when you like go for a promotion or you want to move up in your career and you have that list of things that the role will require. And it normally it's one bullet point of like, you will lead a team. I just don't think it's a single bullet point. It's an entirely different paragraph in its own right. And I think acknowledging that is so important. And it means that you can approach it with less ego. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're less insecure about your abilities because you know that it's completely different.
Yeah, I do think if you're going into a role thinking you've earned it purely based on your tenure, then you're going in thinking that you're better than your team purely based on that. And you've basically already failed, because surely your job as a leader is to cultivate skill, not silence it because, oh, you've not been here long enough. If like your ability as a leader is reflected in the success of your whole team. So you're only as good as your team at the end of the day, and your team should be, presumably you've either hired people or people have become your line reports because they are valuable and can bring in skills which are possibly better than yours. Like, you're in the position to lead. It doesn't mean you have all of the skills that, I always think a great example is someone who is much older and doesn't have the skills in social media that possibly someone 30 years their junior has, or different perspectives because people have come from more diverse backgrounds. And if you are automatically thinking that you're better than your team because you're in that position from tenure, then you've already failed, because it doesn't, there is absolutely nothing that aligns skill level with tenure.
Yeah, I really agree. Like, naturally, the longer you do something, the more experiences you'll have. But that doesn't mean that you deal with those experiences better. And I think back to what you were saying about, like, you don't have to have all the skills. I think that's a really important part of leadership, is knowing you don't have to have all the skills. And that's essentially what you do in building a team, is you hire people who are better at stuff than you are, because you can't be good at everything. So why wouldn't you lean on someone else's expertise when they have it? Mm-hmm. And I think there's something really powerful about saying, do you know what, actually, I'm not an expert in this, but I'm really willing to learn and I'm really willing to respect your opinion, but I'm not an expert. So how can we work together for us to like do this really collaboratively? And almost that vulnerability is so powerful because you suddenly create a culture where people don't have to be perfect. They don't have to be scared of failing. They don't have to pretend that they know it all. Because I think when you create a space like that, that's where you have the danger of people just saying, yeah, I can do that, and things going wrong because they're so scared of being honest. Mm-hmm. But if you start to show an appropriate level of vulnerability, I'm not saying like call your team every day sobbing because life's hard, like obviously, but like if you can show that kind of measured, I don't want to say calculated, that seems quite conniving, but like considered, I guess, vulnerability, I think it can do wonders for a team culture and how you all interact.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, isn't it? Creating a culture of contribution versus a culture of like fear or apprehension. Because as soon as everyone in your team feels like they're part of the room and part of the discussion, that's when you get those core values that like the integrity, the ambition, the openness, the trust. And you've removed that fear of, oh, I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I just won't say anything. Because I think about the amount of times in my early career where I didn't feel like I was part of the room, whether that was because I was in a woman full of men, or whether that was through my own fault because I didn't speak up, or whether I just didn't feel qualified to speak up. And then now I think back on the managers who I most admired. They were the ones who would turn to me in a big meeting and say, Helena, what are your thoughts on this? They would give me the platform when I didn't feel like the confidence myself. And then that was something that I wanted to emulate when I became a manager, like making sure that everyone in the room has the ability to speak up, because otherwise you create an echo chamber, don't you? If everyone who's speaking is the same person from the same background, if there's a culture of fear and everyone feels like they should agree with you, there's no different perspectives, there's no healthy discussion, and then you don't get any growth or new ideas because you're just cruising in autopilot.
I think as well that creates a culture where there's no accountability, because if you have a manager or leader who's kind of gung-ho and is going after exactly what they want all the time, and then not allowing that healthy discussion and contribution of ideas, there's no pride that can be taken when there's success, but there's a real lack of accountability when it all goes wrong, because people can automatically sit there and go, well, that wasn't my idea anyway, I would have done it differently. And yeah, sometimes you will sit there and go, of course I wouldn't have bloody done that, I'd have done it differently. But I think if you can get everyone to come to the table and contribute and have that accountability, it creates stronger teams, because everyone's got something in it then. And that isn't something that I definitely understood when I was younger, and I kind of wasn't always in situations like how you said, where I wasn't always in situations where I felt like I could contribute, or that I made the opportunity for myself. Like maybe there are opportunities, but I didn't necessarily have the confidence to do it. And I think there's a real responsibility on us as individuals who are being led to take every opportunity, but equally as leaders to facilitate those opportunities. Like I see it as the leader has to give the opportunity, and then those being led have to take the opportunity. It's a two-way street, and that's only going to make everyone stronger.
I 100% agree. It is a two-way street. And what you were saying there about like, even when things go wrong, I think that's also a really great opportunity for you to show your leadership, because I think such an important part of being a leader is giving people your time, like making everyone feel valued. And obviously a big part of that is celebrating when they do well, but also supporting them when things aren't going well, whether that is something's gone wrong at work, or they're struggling with their workload, or even if something's going on in their personal life. I think you, for me anyway, I think a good part of leadership is you don't punish that, you listen. And again, this is all part of the culture in your team. It's all part of that culture in your team that, okay, something has gone wrong. Don't judge, don't get angry, don't punish. Instead, what is the reason why? Like, why is someone struggling? Why has this become challenging? And again, it then creates that culture where people feel like they can be open, they can be vulnerable, they can trust you. And it is an entirely two-way street. If you're there for people in your team, they will have much more respect for you as a person and a colleague as well.
That's the thing, isn't it? You want respect, and the way to get respect is to show respect.
Mm-hmm. It's mutual. It's not just an upwards facing respect. Respect should be in all directions.
I couldn't agree more. I don't even think that just applies for work. I think that applies really generally as well in life. Like, everyone has some value to add. You just might not see what that value is initially.
Mm-hmm. And I think a really important part of this whole, I guess, like, why we want to have this conversation is that, like, our generation and the generations to come are the new workforce, and they have the power to change the face of work. And yes, it's not going to happen quickly, but the future of work is in, God, this sounds so like dramatic. It's in the hands, but it is in the hands of like our generation and future generations. And whether you're leading a team of one person or 2,000 people, like, your leadership can leave an impact, and it creates that ripple effect. Like, the managers that I really admire have really impacted how I work now, even years later when I don't work with them. And I think that ripple effect is really important. Like, what team would you have wanted to work with when you left uni or when you first entered the workforce? Like, how can you create an environment that you wish you had had at the start of your career?
I think that's such an important point and such a really great way to look at it as well. And I think as well, that's a really, it's not just about the younger members of your team and the start of their careers, but people who are having career changes, or who, you know, you go through so many things in life, and at different times you'll need different leadership. And I think there's always opportunities for a more supportive and collaborative culture. And maybe that's people coming back from maternity or paternity leave. Maybe it's coming back from sabbaticals, or it's a career change later in your career. Like, I think there's always going to be value in creating a team culture that is supportive and collaborative. And that's within your power to do if you're a leader.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And those, like, more diverse perspectives, more diverse backgrounds, like different experiences is what makes a team more valuable, I think. And
I really agree.
I feel like that is maybe finally being a bit more realized in some workplaces, but I know there's such a long way to go still. But again, if you're going into a leadership role, that's something that you can really emphasize.
I really agree. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation, and as always, we would love to hear your thoughts on this. So please do get in touch with us in the contact details that are in the show notes. You can just hit show more underneath this episode and you will see all of the contact details and also some information about the recommendations from this week as well.
In the meantime, we hope you guys have a great week. Stay safe. I hope it's sunny for you, and we will speak to you next time. Bye.
Bye.